Welcome, everyone, to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this June 21st, 2018. This is Peyman Motahede, the founder and president of Freedom Law School, and your host for this weekly program. Every Thursday night, folks, I host these weekly conference calls in which I help educate you about freedom, law, your rights, and how to live free of oppressive taxation and control. Freedom Law School has said for over 22 years that there is no law that requires the average American to file and pay the federal income tax. It is a huge lie and a fraud on the American people by the deep state of big banks, their corporations, and their lobbyists who own the leadership of both Democrat and Republican parties, and as you've seen, the corrupt deep state bureaucrats within the major power centers of the federal government, that is the U.S. Department of Justice, CIA, NSA, FBI, and the Internal Revenue Service. And Freedom Law School is dedicated to freeing you from the deep state. Folks, if you see Donald Trump under attack outside of president, don't be surprised. This deep state has been at it for a longer time. If they can do this to the president of the United States and get away with it for so long, because remember, not one of those crooks in the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice have gone to jail, have been indicted. If they can get away for so long doing to the president of the United States what they're doing, imagine how many hundreds of thousands or millions of Americans they have done worse to over the decades and actually gotten away with it, because there was no congressional hearing about what happened to a regular mere citizen. So if you go to Freedom Law School's website at livefreenow.org, you will find a lot of great educational material that you will not find anyplace else on the internet. Most of it is not anyplace else. Some of it I got it from other great sources, which I've noted there, that I've found for you to get that information for you in one easy to find and use location at our website, livefreenow.org. So that is your starting point, folks. Go there, read our education material there, watch the videos there, the articles there. Get on our email list, and we will send you the free Freedom Education Package to start your road to living free, like you believed you should be, like you were told you live in a free country. We're not free as we used to be, but we are still in many ways more free than many other people around the world. Like this right to free speech, we can criticize and point out government corruption and criminality and don't be fearful of them trying to stop us, because they cannot. It is our right, it is our duty to expose government corruption and individually and together take action to stop them stealing your money, taking your rights away, taking your freedoms away. So if you go out to our YouTube channel or our blogtalkradio.com, you will see many of our different past conference calls on there. You'll find a subject that is of interest to you. Go ahead and get on that call, that recording of it, listen to that one. That will help you in what you are interested in. For the last few weeks, folks, I've done a little bit of different conference call, summertime is a slow season. So rather than pointing out the fundamentals of the income tax issues that I've covered quite a bit of those earlier in the year, I'm doing a bit of a history lesson for you, the more dedicated, hardcore freedom lover who really wants to know more and get into it and be free and believes in the saying that those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it. And when I started in the movement in 1992, I was wondering why, if income tax is such a fraud, legal fraud, obvious fraud, why hasn't the Patriots won on these issues? And a lot of it, folks, is because the leaders of the movement did not often learn from the mistake of those that came before them. So I looked for anybody in everybody's books, videos, live or recorded seminars that I came across. And I really did my best to learn anything useful, good information from any of those guys to learn from myself. And later on, of course, I'm sharing all that good information with you. So we did a conference call on the Great Lake Patriot Urban Shift a couple of weeks ago on our June 7, 2018 conference call. We did one last week on Lynn Meredith, the author of the book Vultures in Eagle's Clothing. That was on June 14th, 2018 call. And tonight we're going to be talking about another famous Patriot leader, although not as famous and well-known as Urban Schiff or Lynn Meredith. We're going to be talking about a gentleman called Thurston Bell, who got going in the late 1990s and early 2000 years and made a lot of noise out there, and especially talking about the IRS code section 861. We're going to talk about Thurston Bell and the code section 861 of the IRS code that he championed. Remember, if you want to go look up IRS code section 861, all you got to do is in your internet browser, type in 26 space US space 861, hit enter, and you'll see it come up, one of the first few choices from Cornell Law School or, you know, U.S. House of Representatives. You can read the law for yourself. It's one of the wonderful benefits of the internet, folks. You can read the law for yourself. So you don't have to rely on the holy priests of the system, the judges or government lawyers, to tell you what the law is. You can look up and read it for yourself on the internet from the comfort of your home for free. Tonight, I have the pleasure of having a good friend of mine, the most knowledgeable, experienced tax honesty constitutional freedom, tax and monetary policy lawyer in America. I don't know of any one lawyer in America that has more experience and knowledge in all those areas combined than my guest, Mr. Larry Beecraft, of Huntsville, Alabama, because Mr. Beecraft,
hello, Payman.
I'll call him by first. Hello, Larry. He knows a lot about Thurston Bell and where he came from and all that stuff. So Leah's going to help me in this conference call, folks, give you a perspective on history that we can all learn from, good or bad. Larry, welcome to Freedom Law School's Weekly Call.
My pleasure, Payman. Glad you have this conversation.
Well, Larry, let me start by asking you some questions because and then we'll talk about it, from Thurston Bell. I remember, he was very loud in the early 2000 years, like 2000, 2001, 2002. That was his most famous heyday days when We the People Foundation was having these conferences in Washington, D.C. about the legality of the income tax issue. That's what I heard of Thurston Bell. Most of the callers who have heard of him, and they know about him from those days. But I understand you know him from years before that, Larry. Tell me how you know about the origins of Mr. Thurston Bell, how you got involved in the whole freedom tax arson movement.
Well, John Kottmeyer was the leader of the Save a Patriot Fellowship. They got rolling real good back in the late 80s. By the early 90s, he's getting looked at by the feds, particularly the IRS. But John was building an organization, the Save a Patriot Program in Westminster, Maryland, which is pretty close to Pennsylvania. And Thurston Bell lived up in Pennsylvania, found out about the Save a Patriot Fellowship, and started working there. Now, the best I can recall about when Thurston Bell started working for the Save a Patriot Fellowship would be about 1992, maybe 1993. The Save a Patriot program that John Kottmeyer built, he offered services to his members. If the members had a battle with the IRS, they could get help from the people that worked at the SAP office, which included Thurston Bell. Thurston Bell got enthused about the tax issue, starts working with John Kottmeyer. He's one of the people that, does some studying and then starts helping with the members that have whatever problems they might have with the IRS. That lasted about 4 or 5 years. And in about 1997, I think he and some other people got together and said, hey, we're going to branch off. We're going to leave the Save a Patriot Fellowship and go out on our own. So Thurston started his own organization. Payman, do you remember, did you ever hear of Thurston's organization, NITE, National Institute for Tax Education?
Yes, that is the name.
Okay. When do you recall seeing the Thurston Bell for the first time? As a result of what Schultz was doing?
Yes. In year 2000.
So you don't know about anything about how he was working for Save a Patriot Fellowship, then went out on his own and started basically competing against Save a Patriot Fellowship and also promoting the 861 argument.
Right. I had not heard about any of that before.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll kind of cover that. A friend of mine in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, by the name of James Shackelford, was a member of the Save a Patriot Fellowship program. He befriended Thurston Bell, when Thurston Bell started working there. And, in the mid and late 90s, the Save a Patriot Fellowship would have, as annual and semi-annual conferences up at Westminster, Maryland, where the members could come in. You stay a day or two, be entertained, attend some programs and things of that nature. Oh, that's where James Shackelford ran into Thurston and became a friend of his. I taught James Shackelford, this argument about how the code applies, and particularly the use of the source rules in the code for determining taxable income. Well, James Shackelford turned around and educated Thurston Bell about that. So Thurston sits down and does a little basic research, looks at a couple of regulations, and then said, wow, man, this is fantastic. So that became the center of his program. So after he left the Save a Patriot Fellowship program and started his own, he became very loud on the internet. That was in the beginning days, about 97 and 98, the internet was really beginning to roll. That's the day when you had dial-up connections. Ding, 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 ding. It's nothing like we have today. It was all over the phone. But, Thurston started developing a presence on the Internet, and that attracted a lot of people. One of the arguments that he was making related to withholding, and he tried to get a lot of employers involved in his program, and he was successful in doing that. But after a while, Thurston's got a somewhat of a prominence in the movement, and that's about the time that Bob Schultz comes along. Bob Schultz came along about 1998, had Larkin Rose and Thurston Bell on some of the radio programs that Bob was having up in New York. That exposed Bob to the tax movement, so Bob decided to get a little bit more actively involved in the tax movement. By 1999, you know, Schultz is having these seminars up at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. And, of course, Thurston, you know, the egotist that he was, you know, really didn't like anybody else, you know, having a higher profile or getting any type of profile in the tax movement. So that was the beginning of the fallout between Bob Schultz and Thurston Bell. Ultimately, Thurston was... He would prepare pleadings for them, like if they had a battle with the IRS or were drugged to tax court. And Thurston would prepare their briefs. And I looked at a number of those briefs that, you know, these people that are working with Thurston would frequently provide me copies of what he's preparing for them. And, you know, I would say probably half of the pleadings that Thurston would prepare for the people that were associated with him were sitting there talking about, you know, he would write about himself in these pleadings that he would prepare for other people and talk about how phenomenally brilliant that he is coming up with the solution for the income tax. And his argument was really just focused in on a couple of regulations under Section 871 and the other relevant regulations. He thought, man, he had discovered, you know, the silver bullet, so to speak. Well, you know, after a while, Thurston, you know, wore out his welcome with the movement. You know, when Bob Schultz would have some type of an activity, typically in Washington, D.C., Thurston would come down and protest. You know, there were a number of times when Schultz is doing something at the IRS building, and Thurston's out there, you know, protesting, "You guys don't know what you're talking about. I'm the only one in America that knows anything about the income tax," which what he knew about the income tax was extremely shallow. You know, but that's what Thurston Bell was. Now, I envision that the Treasury Department and the Department of Justice, probably about 2001, 2002, they said, you know, the people in the tax movement are getting to be a little bit too rowdy. So they probably, this is just my imagining, I don't know whether this happened, but, you know, it's probably something that they would do. They had a big old map of the United States and the Department of Justice. And then the leaders in the tax movement that they wanted to go after, they put a little name on a pin, and then they would stick it into a city, you know, like John Kottmeyer in Westminster, Maryland. You know, we're going to tackle him. And, you know, some of these other leaders around the country, they'd put their name on a little pin and then stick it into the map. And gradually, as they went along, you know, there certainly was, I did see a pattern of the attacks. You know, they firstly went after to shut people down. They went after some of the people that they thought could they could easily knock down pretty quick. And that included Thurston Bell. But over the years, you know, like Richard Standring. Richard Standring was from Cincinnati. You know, Richard died within the last couple of years. But, you know, they went after Richard Standring. And he was later in the list of people that they were going to target. But Thurston was one of the first people that they targeted. And by 2003, you know, Thurston had been ordered to close his operation, or they were going to lock him up. And they did this all under 26 U.S.C. Section 6700, dealing with abusive tax shelters. But, you know, that's the long and short of the story regarding Thurston Bell. You know, there's been a real problem in the tax movement. There are people that will come along. They got a huge ego. They're not going to work with anything else, and especially in a battle that requires people to work with each other, like the tax movement. But Thurston Bell would have nothing of that. And he hung around with a lot of people that also had similar dispositions, similar characteristics, and they were equally as egotistical as Thurston Bell. So that's the story on Thurston Bell. You know, I would say he hasn't really had any profile. You know, I haven't seen any email from Thurston Bell probably in at least 10 or 12 years. You know, by 2006, nobody heard anything more of Thurston Bell. So does that give you a little bit of a summary of who Thurston Bell was?
It does give an overview there. But I want to say something to add to this issue that you brought up, Larry, is that in the federal government, IRS went after him to stop him from promoting what he did. His website was knight.org, which is closed now. And of course, the court ruled against them. And then 2006, the Court of Appeal ruled against him on his appeal. That's why nothing was ever heard of him, because he was really hoping to win his case on appeal. But sadly, one of the things about him was that I reached out to him back then and to try to build a relationship with him, Larry, to see if I could work with him. Because, you know, Larry, I was one of those guys always. No, it didn't work. You know, I try to work with everybody, learn from each other, work with each other, like the founding fathers, but no, he was not interested. And even though I thought I had a pleasant conversation about him, with him, one time he printed a list of all these organizations that are just fraud and not trustworthy and so forth, and he included Freedom Law School there in there as well, which I was surprised, because I thought, wait a minute, I talked to the guy only once or twice, and everything was fine. Why all of a sudden he judges me as being so terrible, which is very disappointing, because, you know, folks, that's one of the key things that I see in the freedom movement. The consistent pattern is people get to be so self-righteous, they don't want to listen and talk to others and have a calm, civil discussion to see who's right and wrong. And you may have disagreements on issues and may not get resolved, but you can still be civil and work together. Larry and I have some small disagreements on certain things, but we still work together. We're still trying to work on our disagreements as well. And Thurston wasn't one of those guys who was interested in working with other people. And that's why he went out like a flame. You know, he didn't last very long. They call
ego,
him a...
David.
Yes.
Ego is the biggest problem. And Thurston had an ego bigger than anybody else I've ever seen. You know, big. I mean, for somebody to prepare pleadings for another party that he's going to be submitting in court, and then a large part of that pleading is going to be talking about how brilliant Thurston Bell is. You know, you've got a real problem there.
Yeah.
And you know, there are others in the movement. You know, I would say that Pete Hendrickson's got a big ego too. And you can't work with, you know, when Tommy tried to get the Truth Attack rolling, you know, Pete came on board for a while, but, you know, unless he could take it over, he didn't really want anything to do with it, Truth Attack.
And so, well, what's happened, folks, is that it's been up to Freedom Law Schools to try to look and gather anybody who's willing to be cooperative and work with like-minded freedom researchers, lawyers, and freedom thinkers to see what can be done to get rid of this enemy of the American people and restore freedom. And that's why in 1999, I think it was 98 or 99, I forgot, Larry, that's the first time I had an annual freedom leadership conference, you know, we had, Larry, and I got all the best guys I could think about, from Judge John Rizzo, Irvin Schiff, Lynn Meredith, Steve Hemphling, Sean O'Connor, Bill Conklin, you name it. Joe Bannister later on joined us. Larry, you joined us later on, others. You know, the goal has always been to, like the founding fathers, to learn from each other and do a better job. And that's why Freedom Law School folks have been winning. That's why IRS has not even attempted to take Freedom Law School to court over being an abusive tax shelter promoter after 13 to 15 years of investigation of Freedom Law School, longer than that, for being a supposedly abusive tax shelter promotion. The IRS just closed it unofficially. Closed that investigation, because, I mean, how long does it take you to see there is no collusion with Russia, with Trump, on the election? Well, in close to 2 years, I think they're going to get to that. But for Freedom Law School, it took a lot longer for them to see there's nothing abusive tax shelter about Freedom Law School. And so, Larry, let me ask you about the 861 theory itself that Thurston really wanted to champion. What do you What can you tell our listeners about the 861 argument itself?
Well, Payman, I've got a lot of this information posted over on my website. And if people want to go to, I've got two different websites, and you need to go to the Dixieland Law Journal that is posted on my ISP. I've had for ever since I got on the internet, you know, highway.net is my internet service provider. And so I posted this website, this information website, on the highway.net website. You know, for everybody that's a subscriber, you can get a website there. And that's what I did years ago, and that's where this information still is. It's too much to move around. But one of the things back in when I started getting involved with the movement, you know, I could see that there was a need for accurate legal information. And what I did is I copied all of the old tax acts and I copied all of the old regulations. And I still have, in three-ring spiral-bound notebooks, those original copies that I acquired. But then in about 1998, 1999, you know, I anticipated that a lot of legal information was soon going to be posted on the Internet. And, you know, that has come about, although at a lower, at a slower speed than I anticipated. But about 2000, I acquired JPEG images of the entire United States statutes at large. And I converted those to PDF images and made it word searchable. And that is posted over on my website. My website's, the name of it is called the Dixieland Law Journal. And the way you will find it is when you type in an internet search engine, either Beecraft Briefs or Dixieland Law Journal, and that'll carry you over to the website that has these files. Now,
Larry, Beecraft.org, and it goes to your website, Larry Beecraft.
Yeah, I know, but this isn't Larry Beecraft .org is not where this information is, Payman.
Okay.
This information,
there.
Yeah, well, there is something, but it's a work in progress, and we're not going to, I'm going to be changing that over to something else.
Okay.
But the research website is the Dixieland Law Journal. When you get there, it's got, 20-year-old, kind of looks like exploding fireworks on the front page. That's the Dixieland Law Journal that, you know, I'm talking about. Now, when you go down there, I have about seven or eight links on the front page to carry you over to other pages. You know, I think the money issue is real important. I think jurisdiction is real important. But I have a link there to taxation. Now, when you get over to the taxation page, you know, right at the one of the first entries at the top of the taxation page is old tax acts and regulations. So when I converted the entire United States statutes large to searchable text and then had John Rowland post all of those computer files over in his Constitution Society website, after I did that, then I converted the, I created something that did not exist before. Accurate reproductions of all of the old tax acts. And also at the same time, I would go around and hit the law libraries and copy off the old tax regulations. Then I had a friend of mine scan the old tax regulations into convert them to PDF images, and then we made those PDF images word searchable. And I have all of that material posted over on one of the files on my taxation page. I think the name of another link that will carry you over to this were all of the old tax acts and all of the old tax regulations where they're posted. You can download them. And all of this is free. Now, I learned long ago that, you know, all of America is suffering from a trick, a deceptive maneuver of the Treasury and the IRS. Everybody, this includes tax professionals, this includes people that work for the IRS, these are people that work for the Treasury Department, and this includes all of the lawyers in those organizations, as well as everybody in the tax movement. They want to look at just the current law, which is the Internal Revenue Code. Now, my position is that some of the most deceptively worded laws are in the Internal Revenue Code, and I have seen people, because they didn't know the history behind the income tax, will reach the exact opposite conclusion from what the law really is. And the reason for that is they, you know, there's an old expression, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, I've reached the conclusion that if you don't know the tax laws, you're doomed to come up with the wrong answer. And I have just seen people just build an argument based on the current code, and it's completely inaccurate, probably the exact opposite of what its intent is. And the reason that people reach these erroneous conclusions is because they ignore the history of the income tax. Now, one of the things that you got to understand about the income tax is it's all interrelated. And I explain this on that taxation page. You know, one of the things the Treasury Department has done for a number of other types of taxes is they create this in lieu of feature. They'll impose a tax, and then a couple of years later, they'll impose another tax in lieu of the old tax. And then a couple of years after that, they'll impose another tax in lieu of the previous tax. Well, that's exactly what they've done with the income tax. So you can't, because of this in lieu of feature, you can't understand, you know, the real intent, reach, and scope of the federal income tax. Now, you can download all of those acts. I've got the 1916 Act, the 1917 Act, Revenue Acts of 1918, 21, 24, 26, 28, 32, 34, 36, 38, the 39 Code, 54 Code. All of that's posted on my website, including the implementing regs for each of those acts. Now, if you sit down and you move forward into time to see how this thing was built, you will come up with a different understanding about how the tax law operates. Now, let me ask this question of you, Payman. Let's suppose that you are a contractor and you built a house. I mean, from the ground up. Suppose a buyer comes along. I want to buy your house. Let me ask you this simple question. Who would know more about that house? The man who built it, the contractor, or the guy that buys the house? What's your answer?
Obviously, the man that built it.
Right. He knows more about it than the guy that's ultimately going to own the house. Oh, we have the same thing with the federal income tax. You know, I think in some of the other things that you and I are doing, you know, that's not within the scope of this phone call, you know, you can see that, you know, the history behind the income tax is real important. You know, like if you're getting back into some of the old stuff will provide meaning to what you're looking at. Well, if you ignore the old historical stuff, you'll reach an erroneous conclusion. And I think you've seen some of that and some of the other matters that you and I are working on. But, you know, if you go back and take a look at the old stuff, it's a lot simpler. You know, if you're looking at a 25-page, you know, law, that's easier to comprehend and understand than if you're looking at, you know, the 1939 code, which had, you know, 504 pages, and by the time you get up to the 54 code, you're looking at more than 1,000 pages. Now, which is easier to understand? The shorter one. Now, the tax laws, there's a pattern to it. And Payman, haven't you ever heard that old expression, people are so close to the trees that they cannot see the forest? Have you heard that expression? Okay.
Yes, of course.
Well, you know, that's the same thing that you have with the federal income tax. It is so detailed, and people get wrapped up in the details that they cannot see the pattern. But if you see the pattern in the old income tax laws, that pattern remains in place. And, you know, once you know that pattern, then you can see that pattern is what the federal income tax is built upon. But if you never see that pattern, you know, the tax laws can't be comprehended. You know, people will just descend down into some minute details. They might master the minute details, but they cannot see the pattern. And if you look at the old stuff and focus in on, you know, how the tax is imposed and upon whom it is imposed, you know, then you begin to see the pattern. And one of the, you know, the what's real important about the tax laws is, you know, determining who's liable. Well, then back in 1913, you know, the party that was liable for the federal income tax was the withholding agent. But the withholding agent, arguably, was required to deduct and withhold the tax from everybody. Then the Bruchshaber Court made it, rendered its decision in early 1916. And, you know, Congress, I'm sure, had the intentions, if the Bruchshaber case had come out with the decision that the government wanted, the 1916 Act would have been the foundation for the in lieu of feature for the income tax. Well, the Bruchshaber case, in my view, really messed things up. You know, the government was expecting the court to come along and say, you know, the 16th Amendment authorized a direct tax without regard to apportionment. You know, and that's the way the 1913 Act had been written. But since Justice White, in writing the majority, in writing the opinion in the Bruchshaber case, said that the 16th Amendment conferred no new powers of taxation, you know, that required Congress to, and the boys in the Treasury Department and the Bureau of Internal Revenue, to put their heads together and come up with something different in response to the Bruchshaber case. And that they did. By October of 1916, they came out with the Revenue Act of 1916. And since that time, everything has been in lieu of. Now, by the time you get up to the Revenue Act of 1918, the only party who is liable for the federal income tax is the withholding agent for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. Now, you can, it's easy to see this. You know, when I was looking, when I was having to form my opinions by reading hard copies of the tax acts, you know, reading is a whole lot more difficult. One of the reasons why I converted the tax acts to PDF images and made it more searchable is to make it a lot easier for people. So you can go over to my page, you can download, you know, say like download the Revenue Act of 1918 and do a word search for liable. And you can see who is liable for the federal income tax. Whereas the 1913 Act, you know, made the withholding agent liable for the income tax. And also he was collecting, withholding the tax from arguably everybody. By 1918, the only parties that are being subjected to withholding are non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. Not maintaining an office or a place of business here in the United States. You know, and you can see the reason for that is because, you know, apportionment applies. You know, in order for Congress to impose an income tax internally inside the country, the Pollock case still holds, and that would require an apportioned direct tax. So the only way that you can avoid the apportionment requirement is by, you know, imposing an income tax in a situation where apportionment wouldn't apply. But then also it would also be an excise tax. So it's a privilege for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations to come to the United States and engage in trade or business here and get profits and take those profits out of the country. It is perfectly constitutional for those profits to be taxed. And a decision in this respect, and I maintain this is the basis for the federal income tax, you go all the way back to the Civil War income tax, where the Supreme Court reached a conclusion in some litigation involving some people who had stocks and bonds, and they lived in England, and they were being paid dividends from the United States, and the Supreme Court said, yes, we can tax the income of these non-resident aliens and foreign corporations, and to me, that's the basis for the federal income tax today. you know, if you take a look at Section 6001 and 6011 of the Internal Revenue Code, which are two sections that the Internal Revenue Service mentions in its Privacy Act notice, Notice 609, published in the 1040 Instruction Booklet, that notice says, our legal right to ask for information is Internal Revenue Code Section 6001, 6011, Section 6012, and their regulations. They say that you must file a return or statement with us for any tax that you are liable for. So the IRS says you got to be liable in order to be required to file an income tax return. So being liable is real important. If you want to see the structure of a tax, look at look at the booze tax. The booze tax is a real short tax. It's in Section 5001, 5002, 5003, 5004, 5005 of the Internal Revenue Code. You know, booze is, it's a fermented beverage having a alcohol content exceeding 25%. That's booze, and that's what this tax applies to. But you can see in Section 5001, the parties that are liable for the tax. The tax is imposed upon the manufacturer or importer of distilled spirits, and Section 5005 makes that party liable for the tax. Now, using this pattern of finding who's liable, you know, the Subtitle A of the Internal Revenue Code, you know, they impose a tax on a thing known as taxable income in Section 1. Section 1 establishes the rates of the tax. And then you go over 1,460 sections later, you go up to Section 1461, and the party that is liable for the tax is a withholding agent for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. And people will not understand how that section of the code is the literal key to the code, because it's the history, through the history, you will find how virtually all the income tax features are centered around the withholding agent for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. And that's the simple fact of the matter. You got clear liability. The parties that are subjected to withholding are non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. You will not, if you go over to Subtitle C, what everybody looks at today for employee withholding, you won't understand that until you get back into the old stuff, and that includes the regulations. But when you get back into the old stuff and the old regulations, you know, they flat out tell you who is subject to withholding. And since that time, you know, the government itself will tell you that current modern day withholding is built upon the Victory Tax Act of 1942 and the Current Tax Payment Act of 1943. The Victory Tax Act was in effect for 1 year. It was replaced by the Current Tax Payment Act of 1943. The IRS will sit there and tell you that the origins of, you know, the current withholding is based on that act. It's been in effect since 1943. Well, if you go back and take a look at the old stuff, you know, you can see who is subject to withholding. And the same language still appears in the current regulations, but it's, you know, the IRS has added, you know, a lot more print to that set of regulations. So it's hidden in plain sight among many pages of the, you know, regulations for withholding. And people will come along and look at who is subject to withholding, and, you know, you've heard the old trite expression, you know, some people will trip over and fall down. They'll trip over the truth, but then they'll pick themselves up and brush themselves off and walk away. Well, the same thing with withholding. You know, the who is subject to it is right there in the regulation. Even subject to the Social Security is right there. It tells you who it is. But then people will, you know, wow, look at all these other regulations. You know, they're talking about employee and employer and wow, you know, and they completely misconstrue it. So, you know, you won't understand the tax laws until you start looking at, you know, you need to learn the in lieu of feature. And that's real simple. I got a file that will explain the in lieu of feature that connects all of the old tax acts. They're all interrelated. And once you understand that, then start going through and limit your studies to, well, who exactly is subject to this income tax? And some very revealing things will jump out at you, especially if you're looking at something that's older and a lot shorter. So does that explain that? You know, the source rules are real important. And that's what, you know, I sent you, you know, the first explanation. You know, I told the 861 argument to Tupper Saucy back in 1986. He wrote an article about it, and then John Kottmeyer republished that. And, you know, of course, that, you know, and I sent you the link where I've got that posted. But, you know, the heart of the matter is, you know, withholding agents are real important for the income tax. And then you need to be taking a look at what citizens are subject to the tax. And, you know, that requires you to become familiar with all of the provisions relating to citizens and the old acts. And once you see that pattern, you follow it forward, and the pattern is still there. You know, that's the problem with the tax laws. The pattern is still there, but because people have never gone into the old stuff to see the pattern and follow the pattern forward, they're lost in the details of the current Internal Revenue Code. That's my explanation for that.
So the 861 argument goes hand in hand with the other parts of the IRS code that clearly show that the tax is really imposed on foreigners, and that's why the withholding of the income tax is required to be done from foreigners earning money in the United States. Is that, to summarize everything you said, Larry, would that be correct?
Yeah. That's a decent description. But then, you know, when you start looking at citizens, you know, there's a certain class of citizens, ones in the interest of possessions, who are going to be treated as non-resident aliens. So that's important too. But, you know, you won't find that out until you get into the old stuff. But, you know,
yeah. But on your website, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Larry. You were saying, what about this? You were saying,
Hey, I'm going to have to leave here in a few minutes. You know, when this idea of me coming on came up, you know, I didn't have an opportunity to go home and eat, and my wife fixed dinner, so she's expecting me a little after 7 my time to be down there, which is 12 minutes away. But, you know, I did want to come on the show and talk about Thurston Bell because I had a lot of personal experiences with him. And Thurston Bell is representative of a lot of problems that we have in the tax movement. You've got a lot of people that want to be the center of attention. You know, there's a lot of the egotistical people. And, you know, it's been my experience over the years that the egotistical people you're not going to work with them. And, you know, they're isolationists. You know, they're not team players. And, you know, I just find it hard to work with them. And you've seen the same thing.
Well,
but, you know,
certainly the
deep matter,
state, the big banks and the corporations and the politicians and the deep state bureaucrats, they work together. That's one of the reasons these guys are able to make a lot of progress in their evil plans. And the good people in America need to learn from that and work together better to restore the freedom that we've lost.
Yeah. Hey, Payman, let me say this before I leave. Over on my taxation page, I've got links to 2 PDF documents. One is Roy Braw, who's an official at the Treasury Department back during World War II. And you can download and read what he said the purpose of the income tax was in statements that he made, you know, at the end of World War II. Now, also at the end of World War II, Beardsley Rommel, who incidentally was...
Can you tell us on your website exactly where it is? Because everybody, if you go on... type Recraft Briefs on your search engine, it'll get you there, Recraft's website. Once you're there, you go down to the taxation link, which is the fourth one listed there. Click on taxation, and that takes you to taxation portion of Larry Recraft's website. And Larry, from there, where do you say is that 1945?
Okay, wait. The website where this stuff is posted, the website, you know, the computer, the where this is located, It's at home.highway.net, okay, and then BCraft after that. But, you know, look for highway.net in the URL. That is the right Dixieland Law Journal. Now, when you get to the Dixieland Law Journal, you know, I've got, you know, right at the, it's not a very large front page. You know, it's not but about 7 or 8 links to other pages on this website. You got constitutional and other legal materials. You know, I invite people to go read that. You know, there's a link to federal jurisdiction. That's real important, particularly treaties. You know, people need to know something about that. Then I got money and economics. You know, there's a lot of real important money issue materials on that page. But after that, on the front page, there's a link to the taxation page. And when you click on that taxation page, you know, there's a lot of links to other pages. Now, you know, I would say about halfway down that page, you know, it says Rummel speech. There's a link to the Beardsley Rummel speech.
Yes, R-U-M-L speech, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Beardsley Rummel. It's kind of an odd name. You know, I don't know, he might have been German or something like that, but, you know, he was chairman of the New York Federal Reserve Bank during World War II. And he gave a speech, and his speech is mirrored by, you know, another article, and people need to read those, because here you have the government telling you that the purpose of federal taxation is to control inflation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So within that Beardsley Rummel speech paragraph is a PDF of the article written by the Treasury official.
The Rummel speech was first published in a periodical known as American Affairs. You can take a look at a scan of that exact article appearing in this a periodical known as American Affairs, which is no longer published. It's, you know, it's a defunct magazine. But then I also converted that speech to text, and you can read it. There's a PDF file of it. But then there's also another PDF file, you know, in the same paragraph where I mentioned Beardsley Rummel. You know, you can read this article by Roy Blaw, or Blaw. Let me see what his name is. It's Roy Blaw. I was saying Bra. It's B-L-O-U-G-H. You know, hey, he just, you know, comes right out and says that the individual income tax is a method for inflation control. Now, I think that's important.
Yes. In a summary at the end, he says that for these reasons, it can be safely concluded that the individual income tax is an appropriate and effective instrument of inflation control.
Right.
Yes.
But then right below the Rummel speech on my page, you know, I've got the 1921 annual report of the Secretary of the Treasury. You know, it's not the whole thing. That volume is probably 300 or 400 pages long. But I found an article in there where the Treasury Department is talking about the evils of high taxes. High taxes inflict harm on the economy. And the Treasury Department tells you that. Back in 1921.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. Very interesting. Just about 100 years ago, Larry.
Right.
Yeah,
and then also, you know, I'll note, you know, there's a link there, biblical observations. You know, I think Matthew 17 of the Bible tells you what the income tax is. So click on the biblical observations, and boom, you'll find something surprising. A lot of people aren't aware of Matthew 17.
Very good, very good. Well, Larry, thank you very much for taking your time from your family and being with us on the call. I appreciate that very much. Folks,
my pleasure, Raymond.
Thanks for having me, and look forward to having you again in the future again soon, Larry.
Just let me know, Raymond. Have a good night. Bye.
You got it, my friend. All right. Attorney Larry Beardcraft, folks. He's almost 70 years old, been at this stuff for close to 40 years on the income tax, the money system, the Constitution, how they all relate, what they mean, what are the problems and solutions we are facing, how we can get back the roots of freedom that America was founded upon. So with that, folks, we're going to go on to the next part of the conference call, which is to answer your individual questions, whether it is about the subject of the call tonight, about Thurston Belt we talked about, or your own personal freedom issues, questions you may have with the IRS, a state income tax agency, or any government agent or agency of any kind that may be trying to take away your rights, your money, your freedom. I'm here to better help you understand the law and your rights and be free. So push 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. That will let me know that you have a question. Once everyone's questions are answered, then I'll conclude the call. So these calls sometimes take, you know, only but an hour or a little bit longer than that. Sometimes they've taken over 2 hours. So it depends on you. You make the call happen. And I hope you listen to the previous conference calls, folks, that may have your, again, your questions addressed in more detail in some of the previous conference calls of Freedom Law School. That's a tool that's available to you, for you to use that is indispensable. And we're going to have it better organized on our website in the near future by subject matter at livefreenow.org. I'm working on a catalog of the conference calls by subject matter, so you find the one that you're most interested in and you can listen to the calls that focus on that area of freedom law that you're interested in. Let's go to our call now. We have from area code 630. A call from area code 630. Tell me how you heard about Freedom Law School. Tell us if you have our free Freedom Information Package, and then go ahead and ask you. By the way, give me a first name only, but only first name for your privacy, my friend. And then ask your question.
Yeah, Benjamin Finance from Illinois. Thank you for taking my call. My question, Sir Pimon, is that I am interested about the reward regarding if you can prove that there is a law regarding taxes. So my question is, where can I send it to the exact address? Is it in your office or a PO box?
I'm sorry, get closer to your microphone, Benjamin. We don't hear you very good. What is your question about taxation? Where can you find what?
There is a law. There is a law that every citizen has to pay taxes.
Hold on. Let me stop you right there, my friend. Right there, there's a problem with the way you said things. There is in America hundreds of different kinds of taxes. Tax on cigarettes, alcohol, sales tax, you know, gasoline tax, property tax, many more. If you think there is a law that requires a regular American to file and pay their federal income tax, then go ahead and try to claim it, because Freedom Law School has had a $100,000 reward offered for that very answer. If you have it since 1999, and no IRS agent, manager, or lawyer who has looked at Freedom Law School on our website, and many of them have done so, have ever been able to answer that question. So if you have that answer, you believe, go there. In fact, what you want to do, my friend, when you go to livefreenow.org, our website, go down on the education materials to the income tax reward. And once you go there, you can see what the reward is for. And you scroll down a little bit, you will get to the heading in blue that says Income Tax Fighting Match, Payman Mutahedeh versus Jonathan Siegel, who is a law professor at George Washington University Law School in Washington, D.C. And he believes and says there is a law that requires the average American to file the income tax. He, on his own choice, made a claim on Freedom Law School's $300,000 reward. I've refuted everything he said with IRS code sections, with Supreme Court decisions, and guess what? Jonathan Siegel, this law professor, not once came back and disproved anything that I said. I gave him a second chance to come and correct or improve his claim that the average American like you or me is required to file income tax, and he could not, would not, and did not do it. So unless you can go to that page, read what he says and I said, and then go have something beyond that, my friend, it is well settled that the income tax is a giant fraud and scam on the American people, my friend. So what else is on your mind, Benjamin?
Yeah, thank you that
speak up, get close to the microphone. We can barely hear you, Benjamin. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, yes. There are, right now, there are six states which declared no income taxes for the average worker. But I believe that there is, I saw it and I will send it to you on your page.
Okay, well, what's your question, my friend? What is the question that you have of me, my friend, Benjamin?
Yeah, there is a law. There is a law that we are, every citizen has, is required to pay taxes. Every citizen.
No, stop right there. Working. Benjamin, you're not listening.
Okay.
You're not listening. Okay. Well, okay, if there's a law, right. What is the code section? Give me that right now. What is the code section of the law? Go ahead, give it to me. I'll write it down.
I think your secretary gave it to you, the package already. Because
No. Stop. You tell me right now, you keep saying there is a law requiring average American to file income tax. I'm saying, fine, you seem to know it. Give it to all of us right now. Give us the code section right now. We write it up and look it up on our internet. What is the code section?
I don't have it with me. I don't have it with
what?
Me right now.
You don't have it? Okay, well, until you get it, my friend, do not say that, okay?
No,
because I can claim I have a flying pig in my backyard. And until I show you my flying pig, you shouldn't believe me that I claim that I have a pig that flies in my backyard. So, but listen, my friend, this is not a chance for you to lecture me about the stuff, okay? And of course, I'm here to try to enlighten everybody else. What question do you have? Do you have a question on me, or should I go to the next caller? You have a question from me, Benjamin?
Not anymore.
Okay.
But I'll go to your page. I'll just go to your page then.
No, not the Facebook. Don't bother. I'm too busy, to be honest with you, to get on Facebook, and I don't get on banter back and forth on Facebook. It takes too long for me to type in answers, spell check, grammar check, make sure it's complete, and then back and forth, answer questions. I don't have time to do that. Sorry, I'm busy, okay? That's what these calls are for. I can go a lot of back and forth. I can talk faster without spell check and proofreading it, Benjamin. So if you have something to share with you, ask us about, bring it out to full right now. And all of you by email, folks, and Facebook, come on, I don't have time to sit down and answer the untold number of emails people want to ask me. That's what the calls are for. And many of your questions are answered, Benjamin, in the previous calls of Freedom Law School. So again, do you have any more questions tonight or no, my friend?
All right. No more questions.
All right. Thank you for being on Freedom Law School's weekly conference call. I appreciate that, folks. Remember, what we're trying to do, folks, is to educate our way to freedom. There's a famous saying by Goethe, a famous philosopher, who says there is nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And folks, That's where we have a lot of that going on in America. A lot of people go out there, take action, and they don't even know what they're doing. It is all based on lies and propaganda. They've been heard all the lies. They heard the North Koreans want to nuke America. They've heard that Iran wants to nuke Israel. They've heard that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Okay? Chinese and Russia want to come and destroy America. They're all a bunch of lies, folks. America is the most powerful military force on earth, bar none. America is an island protected by two great oceans on either side. Mexico and Canada next to us are our friends, will not dare attack us. U.S. spends more than the next 9 countries in the world in military spending. Yet we all hear the lies that, oh, we got to strengthen and beef up our military defense. What defense? It's all offense. It's all aggression. It's all hurting these third world countries. Oh, these countries want to come and blow us up. So, folks, the income tax issue is the same kind of thing. That without income tax, we have no roads. We have no teachers at school. Other countries, Chinese, Russians, and North Koreans will come take over America, nuke us, and Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And, you know, America, you know, will have be run over by criminals because we don't have money from income taxes. That is all a bunch of lies. America prospered and became from a tiny little coalition of 13 colonies with only a few million people to a continent empire over 100,000 people in 48 states in just a little over 100 years, with practically having no income tax except for less than 10 years. That's it. America did not become great because we had the income tax. America is going down because of the income tax. America is going down because of our phony money system, which is all bank loans to the government and the people, companies, that they make money out of thin air at interest. That we all are in debt to banksters because every dollar in the system is borrowed money from the banks. Every dollar. Of course, that's not taught to you in our public school system. So that's where Freedom Law School works on educating you so that you take informed, intelligent, correct action so you stay free and become more prosperous, have peace and confidence that you can stand up for yourself like a man or woman. In America, the land of the free, you are born free. You are meant to live free. And surrounded with lies and deception that has brainwashed our brothers and sisters, that's where we are fighting, folks. So do your part to get this information out. Email these commerce calls that you like or our website part to your friends. Tell them about our income tax reward. Ask for your friends, neighbors, coworkers to help you collect our $300,000 income tax reward. If you know a lawyer, CPA, certified public accountant, accountant, an old agent, IRS employee, lawyer, or a judge, reach out to them, definitely. And I will double the reward. So you don't have to share your reward with them. Let them know that. Look, here's $600,000. You're a judge. You're a lawyer. You're an accountant. Don't have to split the $300,000. It's double because you can do this. Help me claim this reward. And more people, folks, are finding out about this. Just like they're finding out that not only Hillary Clinton was a total crook that broke the law many ways, not only there was a cover-up by the people in the FBI, Department of Injustice Management and Obama administration to protect and exonerate her, but the same crooks were trying to get rid of the non-politician presidential candidate Trump to get rid of him. Don't let him get in the White House and kick him out. And it's still going on, but more people are finding out what's going on. How? Word of mouth. Put this stuff on your Facebook page, folks. Let them know. Become a fan of Freedom Law School. Get our information to others, folks, and they cannot stop the truth from getting out. It's up to us to do it, folks. Every one of us can make a difference. Every one of you. Don't think you don't have the power and you won't make a difference. That's what they want you to believe, that you're powerless. But you can do your part, and only if you, every one of you, do your part, then we can make it happen. If anybody has any last questions of me, please push 1 on your telephone keypad, and I will answer your question before bidding you all good night. Well, folks, I want to thank you all for calling, and I look forward to being back with you next Thursday, June 21st, with another informative topic on Freedom Law School's weekly conference call. Good night.